Hello, and welcome to another episode of Character Reveal. It's that show where we reveal people's characters. We've said it enough times, I think you guys get it, but for the new guests, that's what we do. As always, I am your host, Dom, aka Brother Dom, everywhere on the internet. And once again, the way we always do it, I am joined by my great co-host. Would you like to let the people know how you sound?
Yeah, I am Stephanie, as always. I am Captain Steph on Twitter and the Snowqueer on Tumblr, and we are lucky enough today to be joined by another awesome guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, yes, sure. Hi, guys. I'm Asia Romano. I am a web culture reporter for Vox. That's vox.com. And I'm really happy to be here. Yay.
Thank you. So how are you feeling today, Asia?
Pretty good. How about you guys?
Doing pretty good.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty good over here. Nice nice fall day in Pittsburgh. Summer's over. But I'm not going to complain. You know, the seasons let you know you're alive. So you write for Vox, so what you're telling us is you're pretty much a famous person, right?
Oh, I would not say that at all, but I do feel very lucky to be able to have that platform. And yeah, it's pretty cool. I get to write mostly about internet subcultures and news and sometimes I explain things, and like I explained the Harambe meme, and that seemed to go over pretty well. So.
Oh my gosh.
Could you, not read your words, but could you kind of explain that to me in the sense that I don't really understand the meme part of it? I know what happened. Yeah. I know who Harambe was, and I know that he passed, but I don't know why it became memetic.
Well, the argument that I took in my article when I was explaining it after thoroughly researching the internet, is that the Harambe meme really represented a couple of different layers of internet culture that were interplaying over this whole incident. And a lot of it was just the outrage fatigue that people had, because the outrage and the backlash over Harambe built so quickly. And a lot of the meme was just people sort of poking fun at the level of hysterics associated with the actual news incident. And a lot of people were pointing out that, you know, the week that Harambe died, there were like 1,200 people who drowned trying to cross the Mediterranean.
Oh, Jesus.
For this because of the refugee crisis. And it was really easy to look at that and be sort of frustrated with the level of the discourse around Harambe. And also there was this widespread belief that it was mostly racist, but it actually started as a response. Well, not, I wouldn't say started, but it, part of the Harambe meme originated within Black Twitter and Black Instagram and Black communities on Facebook, etc., because these people were essentially using that hysteria to poke fun at the way that white people like us tend to drop everything and weep when it's like a famous Black person like Prince or Michael Jackson, or something completely ridiculous like Harambe the gorilla. But when it's actually something like the Black Lives Matter movement, there's all this pushback and resistance, you know.
Yeah, I can remember a lot of that stuff. You know, I was participating in those kind of jokes as well. I know a lot of people says, oh man, you know, if I wear a gorilla suit when I get shot by the cops, maybe people will care. And I was like,
Exactly. It's pretty powerful, right? As a commentary. And so it partially started out that way, and then was immediately appropriated by a lot of racists. Right. And so part of it became an actually racist meme. But it was being picked up by people on all sides of the political spectrum for different means and uses. And so it was kind of interesting to sort of look at that and examine it and see how far it traveled and why. And then, of course, there were a bunch of people who just wanted to yell, "Dicks out for Harambe." So they did.
Yeah, there's that part.
There's always that subsection.
There's always the dicks part of the internet, as one would say.
As it should be.
Right. Yeah. But it did seem kind of weird that, I think you kind of touched on it a little bit, that there were people kind of mocking outrage culture. And to me, it seemed like there were people that were ironically doing it, but then are now not ironically doing it, in the sense that I remember when Larry the Cable Guy rose to prominence, I went to a school where there's a lot of people who, you might call hillbillies or rednecks or something, people that would unironically say get her done. And so we were saying, oh man, my car just broke down, get her done. And then we realized we've been saying this as a joke for so long that it's kind of bleeding into our vocabulary the actual way. We messed around and added this to our vernacular, and now we have to stop. And it seems like the Harambe memes kind of have some shades of that.
Yeah, they're actually, there's this pretty great thread about the Harambe meme on Metafilter that I found back in like July, where people were actually arguing and or questioning themselves about whether they were doing the meme, like whether they were actually mourning ironically or sincerely, because there was this argument and they didn't really know. And some people were like, no, I genuinely miss this gorilla and I genuinely mourn his loss.
It's wild.
And then there were other people who were like, no, it's got to be ironic, right? Aren't we? And then some of, you know, there are the other people who are like, well, I started out as a joke, but now I really feel for the, you know, the guy. And so I think there are a lot of different ways in which things like this converge and test the limits of irony on the internet. And of course, if you're a redneck, like I grew up in the South in Tennessee in a very rural community. So I kind of know all about, you know, being ironically redneck, you know, so it's just kind of one of those things that is what it is.
Yeah, makes sense to me. So you do, so internet subcultures and all that. So how would you really define that? It's kind of a tricky, loaded question to me, at least. I don't know. It's probably easy for you, but how exactly would you define an internet subculture? Like what entails that?
That's a really good question. I think it depends on a lot of different factors. And I think, you know, just like every community is different, every internet community is also very different. And there are communities that have arisen solely on the internet. Like, that's a good example. Say like C-Punk. C-Punk is a really good example of a subculture that basically started with a Twitter joke and became an actual sub-punk subgenre.
So what's C-Punk?
It's kind of like, if you know what vaporware and glitch art.
Yeah.
It's a lot like that, except it's more, it also has like this 90s Lisa Frank Trapper Keeper vibe.
Oh, okay. Like those, like the cup design.
Yeah, and it's called C-Punk because it's like the dolphins flying through the air, like, you know, triangle ocean, you know, palm tree type.
Oh, like SEA punk.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I thought you were just a sea. Okay.
No, like, yeah, SEA, like the sea, like the ocean. And that's a thing that actually got started by a joke that a guy named Little Internet made. So there are subcultures like that that actually are, you know, mostly originating from internet culture. And expanding and evolving different ways. And then there are things like, you know, fandom culture and like the alt-right movement that have, you know, correlations on, like, in real life, and have been around a lot longer than the internet, but are now using the internet to sort of coalesce and gain shape and find a voice, for better or for worse.
You can definitely see both sides of that coin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for the listeners, this is, we ran into some technical issues. This is actually the second time we're speaking with Asia, so we might be missing some 101 things. I feel like we've actually met before, because we have, so it's kind of hard to try to hit those basic tenets, but I don't know if people are necessarily listening to this for interviews, but we can just try to get more into the conversational stuff. But for some 101, how did you really get into writing about the internet rather than just being one of us people who think that we know what's going on and we're just postulating about it? I hope I use that word right.
No, yes. You totally did. Very good.
Yes.
That's a really good question. I actually started out many moons ago as an entertainment reporter and theater reviewer, and then freelanced in that quarter for a long time. And eventually, because I was also doing things on the internet and was really heavily involved in fandom, which is the online, mostly online contingent of fans who like things and form communities around the things that they like. I had a blog, LiveJournal, bless LiveJournal.
Bless his heart.
Yeah, I had a blog on LiveJournal for many years, and after I'd been blogging about fandom and fandom culture for forever, someone recommended me for a position at the Mary Sue, which is this feminist geek culture blog that's pretty popular. And from there, I was hired to be a fandom reporter for a really kind of unique media outlet called The Daily Dot. And I don't really like the name The Daily Dot at all. I'm just changing the name.
But it seems it does have like
it's a very appropriate name. It's basically their whole focus is that they are like the daily, like a regular daily newspaper, except that they are the newspaper of internet culture.
Oh, okay.
So it's The Daily Dot because it's .com.
Okay.
Yeah. So I did not that for 4 years. No, it's not bad. They actually have done a lot of really cool stuff, and I did a lot of really cool things while I was working for them, and I really appreciated the opportunity. Because I don't, at the time I was hired, fandom reporter as a job title was not really a thing. And I was pretty vocal about it being a good thing. And I think, I was one of the few people who kind of helped pave the way for that to be sort of a known thing that people just talk about being like, oh yeah, I'm a fandom journalist now. Like that's a thing that has happened within the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. And I'm really excited about it. So yeah, while I was there, I wrote about fandom, but I also wrote about all kinds of other aspects of geek culture and internet culture, because you're always having to pick up other people's beats and just sort of cover the internet more broadly in a general way. And so yeah, Vox asked me to come be their one of their web culture reporters, and I said yeah, so that's what I do.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, it was great.
If I could ask, and for some clarity, what's the difference between, I guess, a fandom reporter and a news reporter that's within a fandom? In the sense, I guess, someone who would report on news in the Harry Potter world versus somebody who's reporting on the Harry Potter fandom itself. Is there a difference there, or?
Yeah, I think there is. I guess your mileage may vary about how much difference there is, but a lot of times when people write about fandom culture, they're writing about what the fans themselves are doing and saying and how fans are reacting and in many cases backlashing to various news incidents that happen that tie into their fandom or that are about their fandom or their canon. Canon is the story that everybody likes. So if I'm in the Harry Potter fandom, the Harry Potter books are my canon. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so basically, if you are a news reporter, if you're just writing for a geek media outlet, you would cover all of the forward-facing, like public-facing news about that franchise, for example, you know? But you would never necessarily have cause to go look at the Tumblr communities or the Twitter communities or the DeviantArt conversations or something.
Because those aren't news.
Right, those aren't news, those are just fans doing things, right? But the Daily Dot, as it looked at subcultures on the internet generally, it tended to take the view that, and I do too, like I continue to hold this view, that internet subcultures are pretty much extensions of real life and are therefore valuable in their own right, because it's really fascinating to see what people are doing and how they're interacting on the internet. So I've gotten to write about a bunch of really cool things because I tend to look at fandom and what the fans are doing themselves more closely. And sometimes I write about controversial things. Like I have written about, for example, I wrote about this controversy over a Steven Universe fan artist last year, where the conversation around that was happening in the fandom was one that had a lot of different layers in terms of progressive values and social justice and bullying, and it was really complicated. And so it was a fandom story, but it was also a larger story of politics on the internet. And so when you find those types of stories, I think they can be pretty valuable because they not only teach you about, you know, a specific fandom culture, in this case, Steven Universe, but they, you know, they show you an insight into how people are using the internet and why and for what purpose.
Okay. I'm curious if you have any insight to this. I'm asking a lot of questions that are just more from my personal knowledge that I hope the listeners like, and Steph and Asia, please feel free to interrupt me at any time. Do you notice, or do you seem to understand or know why there just seems to be such a rash of toxicity in certain fandoms that are tend to be like kids' shows that have an adult audience or that aren't purely kids' shows? You know, I haven't heard anything like the Lazy Tom fandom getting out of control, or the Dora the Explorer fandom getting out of control. But, you know, we saw it with the My Little Pony and the Bronies, which seemed a little bit more cut and dry. But even, you know, Undertale, Homestuck, Steven Universe, they tend to get, like, these these fandoms that have these bad reputations. And I don't think it can't purely just be that they skew younger, because so many shows do. Like, do you have any ideas about that?
I wrote about Outlander fandom earlier this year. I wrote about, it was a pretty niche corner of Outlander fandom, but it was just this really fascinating, essentially fandom wank, which is just, the fandom term for controversy. Mm-hmm. And it often comes with a lot of, like, harassment and infighting on all sides, which is what makes it wanky. And the Outlander fandom was mostly full of people who had never been in fandom before, and they were mostly, almost entirely, not wholly, but pretty generally made up of older women, like 40s and older. Huh. And I was totally fascinated by this, because this was one of the bitterest and most, like, deeply entrenched, like, level of fandom infighting that I have ever seen, ever. And I've been in fandom since 1998, so I've seen a lot. I've seen a ton of drama come down the pike over the years, and I was just sort of blown away by how these people who had never been in fandoms before were generally, like, picking up on all of these kind of, I guess, eternal fandom, like, things to be mad about.
Right. It kind of fell into the same traps we all do.
Yeah. And so I honestly don't think it has anything to do with the canon. I really don't. I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that, you know, even children's shows that, you know, preach tolerance and love and goodwill seem to breed a lot of hostility sometimes, and a lot of, like, fandom infighting. And I don't think it has anything to do with age, and I don't think it has anything to do with your level of actual fandom experience. Although I do think that often the more experienced you are in fandom, the more you tend to just be like, eh, live and let live, because you just get tired.
Yeah, seriously.
And also you've just seen enough, so things tend to faze you less, you know? Like, after you've lived through, like, cult leaders pretending to be Elijah Wood in order to, you know, scam people out of, you know, going to a Lord of the Rings convention because they think that they're channeling him on the astral plane. Like, after you've been through that kind of thing, like, like, it just doesn't, the other, like, the small stuff, you don't sweat as much, you know? So I wish I could answer your question more to your satisfaction, because I know what you're going for, and I do think that there are specific, I think that you could argue that because some shows are children's shows, people tend to be way more invested in the, quote, moral, the morality and the ethics of what people do online.
Right.
But that's not always, it's definitely not just limited to that kind of canon, because these Outlander people were just, like, they were, basically, it's a really long story, but basically there was a whole lot of, like, moral judging going on, and a whole lot of, you know, this type of way of being in fandom is immoral and I will not have it, you know, that kind of thing. So it's a really similar kind of bent. And so I don't really think it has anything to do with the canon itself. I think it's just about your level of investment. And also I think the internet, especially social media, like the advent of social media has made it a lot easier for people to feel, for people who are deeply morally invested in something to come together and then, you know, go on a crusade over it, basically.
Okay. That makes sense.
I wonder too, this kind of goes backwards to what Asia's saying, but I wonder too if for shows like Steven Universe, for example, which is considered, like, peak representation, like, peak excellence in children's media for social justice issues right now, I wonder if that, like, if it does, because it has a younger fandom that's being introduced to these concepts, like, within the kind of, like, echo chamber of Tumblr, that they're reacting to smaller things more because they're, like, they think they're holding people to a higher standard, but they're not. Am I making sense?
That does, because, like, one of the controversies in the Steven Universe fandom often is either whitewashing or making fat characters skinny, and not saying that those things are good, but for some of us that are more in fandom longer or just a little bit older, it's like, this sucks, but this is far from the first time I've seen this, and it hasn't, it's not quite as egregious here, or I tend to see more things as, hey buddy, don't do this again, please, and just letting you know why what you're doing isn't so great, but if you're going to keep doing it, I really don't feel like fighting this fight. And, you know, sometimes people have stylistic choices or whatever, which I'm not saying that's an excuse, but then I'll see some people like, this is the most important thing to argue about right now. I'm like, it's the art, the original work didn't do this. I don't really know how much I particularly care, to go to Asia's right. point. I kind of just don't care. But I mean, I remember back, there was some line in time when people thought the bronies were going to invade the Steven Universe fandom with tons of porn, which Rule 34 exists. So I mean, if you're not finding the porn, it's someone's doing a great job of filtering it. But and then the great Overwatch porn scandal of 2016 happened, but I don't remember nearly as many people having a problem with it. They're like, eh, whatever, just don't look for it. And I understand they're aimed at different audiences, but I wonder if that has something to do with how people react to, like you said, moral dips.
I don't know. I think there's so many ways you could answer that, and I think it's going to be different for everybody. Everybody's going to have a different answer, you know. Like, and just on AO3, which is the archive of our own, which is the biggest. Well, how do you describe AO3? It's like the biggest independent, non-corporate fan fiction archive in the universe. It's basically run by fans, and it's amazing. But it's also, because it's run by, it was created out of Slash fandom. It skews very heavily towards Slash. And Western media fandoms, but in the last couple of years, like, a lot of people have talked about how it's gotten much more toxic. Like, the level of people the number of people who are willing to comment and be like, this kink isn't okay, how dare you write this, has grown exponentially. And like, just the other day, like, I had I'm gonna reveal way too much about myself, but
This is a great place to do it.
I had this Paranormal Activity fanfic that I wrote, and it's for Paranormal Activity 3, which, if you've seen it, is about these two little girls who are in this household that they're both being tormented by this ghost, and there are some pretty dark, you know, weirdly, like, vaguely nebulously sexual implications between them and this demon.
Horror movie, so.
Yeah, exactly. It's a horror movie. So I'd written this fanfic years ago for Yuletide, and that was set, you know, dealing with this, not dealing with it, but just sort of implying it very, like the film does, just very vaguely. But I tagged it Shota, just for, you know, for warning's sake. And the other day, somebody who had been going through the AO3 tag for Shota and just, like, basically leaving flames on every single fic, like, commented, and they were like, I hope your mother finds this. You deserve to die. Your parents deserve to die. And on the one level, I was sort of like, yeah, this is hilarious. But on another, I was just like, really? You're going through the Shota tag. This is what we've come to now. So I think that there's just this, I don't want to say increasing, because I think that impulse has always been there. Like, that impulse to sort of judge people and be like, you can't write this. This is immoral. Like, when I was in Harry Potter fandom way back in the day, in like 2002, we had the series of sock puppets that were probably all orchestrated by a single troll. It's a very long story.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah, like, we had this series of sock puppets that over a whole year, like, basically spent months, like, harassing us, basically just because we were fanfic writers, you know? So, yeah, I think I was done making whatever point I was making.
Okay.
I was just, yeah. Basically, the internet is bad and harassment is bad and stuff.
It makes sense to me. I think kind of part of the... you said the impulse has always been there to call people out, even if it's not necessarily something valid. But I wonder if that goes back to, you know, we were talking about the Harambe meme. People are mad at fake outrage. I wonder if there is an impulse to get outraged at every single thing, because of the level of microaggressions, how much they can, you know, push crappiness, you know, like, every little microaggression adds up, and each time you don't call it off, it kind of adds them out. And so I feel like people are more willing to call out small things, or at least to some people seem small, when a lot of us who aren't affected by that particular thing will say, it's not that bad, and also I didn't read it the way that you are, so it's not informing my opinions in a negative way the way you think it is. Versus before, used to just be like you'd have to do something like blatantly racist, sexist, or transphobic for someone to say not to do it. Now, if you even kind of do something a little sketchy, people sort of have a hair trigger. I don't know. I don't know if that contributes to it at all.
I mean, I think that there's how to say this. I think that there's probably a tendency to want to believe that people are overreacting, but I think in reality, like these, because I mean, I can't say I'm not. I'm a queer, genderqueer white woman. So my level of experiencing, you know, the harm of microaggressions is like significantly less than, say, a woman of color, you know, or someone who's transgender.
Sure.
And so I feel like it's not that these reactions, these like these hurt reactions to various microaggressions and various levels of, you know, systemic harassment and systemic oppression, et cetera, haven't always been there. It's just that they're more visible and people feel like they have more of a space and are more empowered to actually talk about them on the internet now, you know, especially because social media, you know, and also social media puts us all together in ways that we aren't always prepared for.
Right.
So,
yeah, I guess I just see myself, I always try to be like super chill, even in the face of things that I shouldn't be chill about. So unless something is like 100% like that bad, I'll normally just be like, hey, chill, don't do that. Like, I'll play Overwatch. You know, people want to say the N-word or type it out. And it's typically not at me. It's normally just, you know, people are throwing it around because they're being hashtag edgy or something. And normally right. I'll just start with, like, hey, buddy, relax. Don't do that. And, you know, most people will just be like, whoa, or sorry. Or, like, bro, it's the internet. But they still won't do it again because it's kind of like they'll try to play it off as, like, it's not that serious. But they won't do it again because they know, yikes, I shouldn't have did that.
Well, I think if you are doing it in, I think if you're in a game and you're in a live, and you're all live on the mic and so forth, and you're all in this position of being peers calling out somebody, that has a completely different effect, right? Than if you're reblogging something on Tumblr to yell at somebody, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I some difference there.
Like, I think it's way more constructive. And I think if you're a young guy who is, you know, growing up gaming,
you've heard some slurs.
Yeah, but if your older peers are like, hey, not cool, then you're going to respect them because you're all gaming together, right?
Sure.
Whereas if it's, you know, Tumblr in action on Reddit just mocking the shit out of Tumblr social justice culture all the time, like there's no incentive to actually learn from any type of level of that's happening there, right? No matter what, if you're in that position, you're going to mock them no matter what they say, you
right.
know, and the salient points are going to be, you know, thrown in, tossed in with the over the top reactions. Right. So
yeah, like, that makes a lot of sense.
So for me personally, I would much rather keep the over the top reactions, even if they are ridiculous.
Agree with that. Yeah. I'd rather people get called out, even if it's like, hey, this wasn't the hill worth dying on, but like, you know, we can't let these hills keep popping up. So do what you need to do.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I do think that a lot of times I get really, where I get frustrated is that, you know, the whole point of call out culture ultimately is for people to be better to each other, right? And if you miss that, if you go after people because of something that they say or do that is problematic, to the extent that you forget that they are still a human being, right? Like if you just degrade them to the point where you have, you know, lost sight of their intrinsic humanity, then I think that defeats the whole point of why we have call out culture to begin with.
Absolutely.
And I know that that's why a lot of dudes on Reddit, et cetera, probably get super frustrated, but you know, I see that rarely. And I hope that if we can just keep having the conversations, ultimately you want to think that we get to a place where we're all sort of listening and learning from each other, even if that learning is taking place, you know, through lots of, I don't know, I get this picture of like people on, like in a Monty Python movie, tossing cows over the stone wall or something, you know, like it's that level of interaction, you know, but whatever.
I hear you. So I was talking to Stephanie about this probably yesterday. I think we were chit-chatting about it. Certain websites, almost every website or internet seems to have a feel to it. Or community or culture too, despite the fact that these are just tools, in the sense that there's no specific reason why Tumblr has to be home of social justice, or 4chan has to be a cesspit, or Reddit has to wildly differentiate between chaotic good and chaotic evil depending on which subreddit you're on. It just depends on the people. But why do we, you know, from what I understand, 4chan just started as a place to trade anime. It wasn't necessarily built to be what it is today, and I don't think Tumblr probably was. It is just a platform. So, and I don't know if there's a hard, fast answer to this, but why do you think there's sort of specific demographic cultures and feels to certain websites, despite them inherently being neutral?
This is such a loaded question.
I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. So it's, and if you want to decline it, feel free.
I think about it a lot, actually, because, because of my job and because of just my history on the internet. And I have a friend who I respect her opinion and her judgment about, you know, the internet culture and the experiences that she's had a lot. And she had used to spend quite a lot of time at 4chan, and she's told me over and over that, you know, 4chan is basically defined by B, and that's not the only 4chan sub forum. You know, the anime forums are there. There are other kinds of discussion forums that are there. And to me, when I talk about it, I try to remind myself that, yeah, these people may be being asshats on B, but there may be other people who never even go to B who are on 4chan having completely normalized discussions that have nothing to do with this culture that 4chan has become known for, right?
Exactly.
And I feel to some way, to some extent, that the same thing can be said for a lot of different internet platforms. Like, if you look at Reddit, obviously Reddit is just like that. There's a microcosm of everything good and bad at once on there that the internet has to offer. But it's mostly known for, at this point, for being sort of meme-y and being the home of the alt-right movement. Whereas, you know, Tumblr, same thing. Like, you know, you have your porn, you have your fan culture, you have your...
Porn's on all these websites. We can guarantee
right,
that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have your hipster landscape posts, you know, and, you know, your fashion bloggers. And then you have, you know, you have your, like, trolls from Reddit who are like pretending to be social justice warriors, but then like it's become mostly known for quote unquote social justice warriors, which is the derogatory term that Reddit has given to social justice progressive politics on Tumblr. And you know, even if some of these characteristics are true for a lot of the site, they're not true for all of the site, and that holds true for no matter what the platform is, right?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that, you know, if you look at a site like Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, you don't really have this level of like, it's there. These other platforms aren't associated with a specific political divide the way that 4chan and Reddit and Tumblr all are. And I find that fascinating, right?
Yeah. Well,
go ahead.
I was just gonna say, it's funny. Dom and I and a group of our friends did human website cosplay earlier this summer, where we all dressed as like a like a humanized version of whatever like the social media or website of our choice was. And like immediately for Tumblr I was like, okay, so high-waisted shorts, like hipster glasses, like my bisexual pin, like
of course
I've got it, like. And, like, for each of us, we each had, like, we're, like, there were stereotypes that we immediately went to for the website of choice.
Like, for Reddit, you want to do a neckbeard and a fedora, right? Like...
Exactly.
Oh, for sure. We should, we wanted to get a Reddit. I mean, part of it was aesthetic, of course, just like, you know, Twitter, you gotta get blue stuff, but I figured, I was like, I need to be, you know, like, kind of... sort of hipstery clothes, like a which someone might wear to like Afropunk or something, or
right, or you want to be like a tech startup bro.
Yeah, so I mean, we were taking all, like, every time we would take a picture, people would be looking at the camera trying to do something, and I would be taking a selfie or something, or just looking at my, like, obsessed with and
scrolling my dash.
Yeah. Like... it's just kind of interesting that these sites have identities to some degree, you know. We had a friend who was Facebook, and well, what she did was kind of like the Facebook girl that wants to do a duck lip selfie, which
of course
I guess to sum up her look, what it was, I mean, I think they all looked really good, and some of them did things that weren't social medias, like Wikipedia and WebMD and YouTube. Those are a little bit harder to get a culture on those, except YouTube's like kind of a troll haven, but...
Interesting. I think I probably would have tried to dress as a nerd fighter for YouTube, which would have been pretty esoteric, but whatever.
As nerf, is that a, is that,
that's the Green Brothers, isn't it?
Yeah, the Vlog Brothers.
Okay. I'm thinking, I was thinking of Nerd Rider, I think.
Different thing.
Good channel, if I'm remembering it right, but different thing. Yeah, that's something that always just kind of struck me as odd, is I remember every time there's an internet controversy, people will be like, oh, well, here come the jerks from Reddit. I'm like, is Reddit like the same Reddit that sends pizzas to children's hospital? Like, this can't be. And then people will say, oh, Tumblr, that's where all the SJWs are. I'm like, you mean like the same place where all those neo-Nazis are? What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's hard because, like, I do Reddit GIFs. I really love Reddit GIFs. And sometimes my Reddit gift exchange person will totally be an alt-right winger, you know, but they still, you know, are wanting to give strangers gifts for Christmas, right?
And, isn't that a funny thing?
I mean,
how similar we all are, despite the fact that we will fight right. So adamantly, but it's like, hey, here's a trinket.
Right, but I think you know, they sign up for the same reason that I sign up. You know, they don't mind, you know, putting up the peace flag, you know, while we can, if it's to make people happy for Christmas, right? Like, there are these shared commonalities that I think make navigating these sites a little tricky, because you kind of want to assume that, you know, you're going into these spaces with the same values, and then sometimes you get surprised when that turns out not to be the case. Like, with Reddit, I really appreciate Reddit a lot, but I also have had more moments than I can count where, like, attempts to discuss women, like the existence of women at all.
Women, period.
Like, on any forum, like True Detective, once I linked this, I really love the True Detective forum, but I linked this really smart review of the misogyny in the last, well, it wasn't just with the misogyny, but it mentioned the misogyny in the last season, or excuse me, in the last episode of the first season. And oh my God, I got downvoted so hard and so fast. And I was just sort of stunned, you know, because these people had been, you know, for the most part, it had been a really intelligent, smart subreddit, obviously male dominated, but whatever. And then, you know, there are moments like that where you're just like, okay, yep, this is Reddit. This is why I'm not on Reddit very often.
Yeah, I had a friend. Go ahead.
I was just, you know, but you don't want it to be like that. You know, you want to just be like, hey, women exist. That's okay. But, you know, you kind of have to pick your battles, right? Like, so if I want my True Detective meta, then I have to just sort of swallow it. And I think that sucks. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I had a friend. She made actually a sock puppet Reddit account to talk about, God, what was it? The Boardwalk Empire on Reddit, because she adores Boardwalk Empire. It's her, like, it was her favorite show. But she also ran a skincare, or, well, she didn't run, but she moderated a skincare Reddit, subreddit. And so if someone followed her username back, they would see that she was female, and, like, they even would, like, catch on that some of her phrasing was, like, female-coded when she would want to talk about the episodes in the Boardwalk Empire subreddit. So she made a separate, like, a sock puppet account so she could just, like, be a Boardwalk Empire fan in peace on the internet.
That's such trash that it has to be that's the case. Like,
yeah, but I mean, I can't tell you the number of times, even when, you know, no matter what, I'll be like, hey, I'm a girl, and somebody will be like, yeah, this guy says, like, they don't even, you know,
yeah,
they just assume by default that you're a male on the internet, which is not something I ever encountered in my life until I started going to Reddit, like, because I just grew up, you know, being in fandom communities and being on LiveJournal where most people were women.
Yeah, you kind of assume everyone's a woman in fandom.
Yeah, until proven otherwise. And it's not like that pretty much anywhere else on the internet, which is crazy to me. So
that yeah, it's similar. It's funny, too. At cons, I feel like there's also a culture of queer till proven otherwise. Mm-hmm. At least at, like, small, I don't know, not so much at bigger, like, fan conventions, but, like, at small anime conventions, like the local anime conventions.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And even at, I don't know what when it becomes a big anime convention, but even at Otakon, I'm like, it's pretty queer event we got going on here. And, like, even the people that seem to be giving off stereotypically heterosexual vibes are still, like, dudes wearing skirts. So I'm like, well, you know,
oh, yeah, totally.
You're doing some play with gender here. Like, I'm not going to, I don't know if there's a someone walking around who's like 100% like straight bro running around at these.
Yeah,
which is interesting.
Like you see a lot of brolitas at Dragon Con and Otakon too, you know, and so brolitas tend to look pretty bro-y, except they're wearing a Lolita, you know. So it's geek conventions especially are a
strange microcosm.
Yeah, they're very gender fluid in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I had a point, but I completely lost it. Don't know what it was going to, but as far as, you know, it's weird, you know, being a cisgender guy, black guy on the internet that is still really into fandom. So my first fandom, as everyone who listens to this will know, was Sonic, which has always been a weird one, which it never really occurred to me what gender people may or may not be in that fandom, because there's so much. The really weird, creepy parts of the fandom, such as like over sexualizing the characters, what happened to the female characters, but also the male characters, seeing as it's probably 10 to 3 women to some degree. And then I've seen more pictures of, you know, Sonic with like abs and soft lighting and blushed cheeks that I care to admit. But so I figured, I was like, well, that means there's either, you know, women that are attracted to men or men that are attracted to men in this fandom, I would assume, to some degree. And then I spend time like the Steven Universe fandom and stuff, so I see more of like a gender, I don't know if neutrality is a word, but diversity. And then you play all, well, I don't really play that many online games because screw them, but I play a lot of Overwatch because I am a gamer, and got people would be like, okay boys, let's win this one, and I'm like, well, it's probably mostly boys here, but you don't know that for sure. And once you hear everybody's voices, you get sometimes it's mostly men, but I've played with a lot of women, and, you know, people don't seem to really give them any crap, which is good. Well, not for their gender.
It's
if they're a Hanzo main, they're always going to catch crap from anybody, and that's a decision that you chose to make. But it is weird getting that difference to know that people are, I don't know, that there's demographic differences everywhere.
Yeah, I think one thing about gaming too is that a lot of women turn off their mics, and that like statistically, like the number of women who never turn on their mics and speak in when they're live gaming is incredibly high. There've been all kinds of like research on this, and so it sort of creates this like dudes who think that they're not gaming with women are going to have that reinforced because the women never turn on their mics, because the dudes who think that they're not gaming with women are going to be more likely to be misogynist.
For sure.
You know? So it creates this like self-fulfilling prophecy. Interesting.
Oh, go ahead.
I think it's interesting, and I think that's changing. I think awareness of that is changing.
For sure. My buddy told me that Blizzard games tend to be really more strict on their harassment, and the communities tend to have at least a, we don't want to be a junky fandom, so behave even if you don't believe in it kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember we were playing, and there was this guy that was just being toxic in general, and when he wasn't, he was just being kind of annoying. And there was a female player on our team, and she was doing something, and the guy was being a dick to her, and she's like, hey, don't freaking yell at me. And he's like, well, what are you going to do? And the rest of us like, bro, calm down. Like, stop stop doing, that's not, you're not doing a good thing. Like, like, the misogyny's not cool, the racism's not cool, like, and please also just stop screaming at the mic in general. Like, you're really pissing everybody off. And, you know, we're not out there trying to do it for, like, the cookies or brownie points. It's just the right thing to do. But I've heard a lot more people trying to stop people from being the isms on that game, which is refreshing.
That's fantastic. That's really fantastic. And I wish that there were that side of the story isn't often told, you know, when people talk about the gaming and the gender divide. And I wish it were told more often. And I wish that there was some sort of like, you know, communal equivalent of that we could get going on the internet in general. Because obviously it's really easy to do when it's just all of you guys talking into a microphone at once, right? Like, you can immediately communicate what needs to happen in order for this game to continue.
I think it's because there's consequences, you know? Like, some people got caught for cheating on Overwatch, like using aimbots and stuff. So Blizzard was like, okay, cool, we're just going to ban you. Like, your whole entire computer and IP address. So people rebought the game, made a new account, and they're like, no, you can't get on, you can't do it. And
nice.
Which is, you know, they take the gaming pretty seriously, but, and I don't think they've banned anybody for harassment, but they know this company is not afraid to lose your if you have a WoW subscription, potentially thousands of dollars over some amount of time. So your account means something to you, whether even though it's anonymous. I mean, I'm Brother Dom, so people know me. If if they know who I am, they'll know me. It's not like Sharpshooter 5 or something. But on Twitter or something, you don't need to have a cell phone. You don't need to have anything. So they can completely ban your account. You're like, whatever, I'll make a new one. Like, I know who I'm harassing. I don't, right. It doesn't matter who I am.
Well, it's almost impossible to get them to ban your account anyway. Like, well, that, they'll suspend, you know, you say,
there's
you
that
say,
too.
Oh, yeah, Twitter is a whole set of different, you know, problems and issues, but we only have so much time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think anybody's sitting here talking about how great of a platform Twitter currently is. I think if all the good things we say about Twitter are, it's kind of like America. This is great in theory, and we like what it could be and what it should be. It's just that we have, you know, some people who don't want to be so nice.
Yeah, there's a lot that I love about Twitter. I mean, I usually like it more than I'm frustrated with it. But, you know, when you're frustrated with it, it's because someone's telling you that they want to rape you and kill you and, you know, they want you to die. And then you're, and Twitter's like, this doesn't look like it's harassment to us. You're just like, go to hell.
That's what's so weird. You know, it's almost the point, like, you wish you would, they would just say, I don't actually care about this, rather than say, this isn't harassment, you know? Like, it wouldn't fix anything, but at least it would be more honest, you know?
Right.
Like, there's no way to say, this isn't harassment. You're like, it kind of is. Like, it actually
like
100% is.
Exactly harassment.
Like,
it's... Yeah, like, I think that they want, I mean, I don't know what they want. I mean, I think that we are so far past the moment when they should have had acceptable, like, consistent determining factors for what constitutes harassment in place, you know, and for them not to have it yet, and for them to still basically be relying on somebody to be famous in order to really take action, is just, it's really frustrating. But
the only thing I could say in their defense is, you know, I watch professional sports, so I saw something like this in the NFL where it's hard for you to put a blanket on what's considered harassment based on, like, without someone reading it. Like, they can't put a bot on it, which is why they probably won't do it, in the sense that there was a rumor going around that they were going to ban people from saying the N-word in the NFL, which on paper sounds like an amazing thing. That's a racial slur, until you remember that the majority of the league is black players, and agree with it or not, a lot of black players use the N-word colloquially as, you know, buddy or guy or person. So that means, and then you get into the territory of like, well, you can say it and you can't. So it's not the word, it's more of the intention. And it's hard to, you as a referee or whoever it would be, to say, well, that was what their intention was. I mean, we all can get where people are coming from.
Yeah,
but it's like with Twitter, you know, if you just send it through the bot, flag these words, like, whoa, okay, maybe there's a chance that someone wasn't saying this in a threatening way. Like, these words themselves weren't harassing. Problem is,
it's really tricky.
Which doesn't say that they shouldn't try, because I don't even think they're trying. They haven't even given us that much yet, which would be a huge step for them to say, well, this is hard because X, Y, Z. And then people would be like, okay, cool. Try to figure out the next thing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. But we talked about a lot. We got a nice little group in. hope I'm not cutting anybody off or anything like that.
No.
Good. So, Asia, how are you feeling?
Pretty good. This has been fun.
Cool. Yeah, it's take two is just as fun as the first one, which is a good sign, which means it wasn't a fluke. Steph, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good.
Are you feeling the Sunday blues yet?
I'm getting there.
Oh, I woke up with them. So, no need to explain it, but Asia, would you like to jump into our not-so-rapid-rapid-fire section again?
Oh, sure.
And we'll do the same questions, because the listeners don't know, and...
And I don't remember which ones we picked last time.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, me either.
Yeah.
So, per tradition, Stephanie, would you like to kick off our lovely little section?
Sure. All right. Let's go with an easy one first. What's your Hogwarts house?
Oh my god, this isn't easy at all. I think I said this last time too. So my Hogwarts house is a bit of a sore point for me, because I, when the first Pottermore sorting quiz came out, I got sorted into Slytherin, and I was like, absolutely not, I wouldn't last a day in Slytherin. And I couldn't figure out, I think it was because I am like a water sign and it's in Slytherin is like the water house. And I was really annoyed about it. And I was annoyed for like years. And then last year, the new Pottermore quiz came out. And so I was like, okay. And so I took it again and I got Slytherin again. And I was like deeply enraged, not enraged, but just like, I've never actually known which house I would fit in because, but all I know is that like, just because I really like Slytherin and like and I can empathize with them and I sort of root for them does not mean that I am a Slytherin. Like they would tear me apart, right? And so I decided I was going to take the quiz again, and this time I was trying so hard not to get put in Slytherin that I got put in Hufflepuff, which was completely mortifying. So I took it again, and this time I got put back in Slytherin. So I don't really feel like I have a Hogwarts house that's like. That I can call
it's
my
yours.
Own. I mean, I guess I would be. I guess this is all signs point to Slytherin. But I would. They would kill me. They would just eat me alive. Nice. So
snakes on a plane point to Slytherin.
Yeah. So I would. I guess I would be that like lonely Slytherin who has no friends in her house and has to go like hang out, like sit with the losers at the Hufflepuff table. You know.
No,
like,
no. Every Slytherin needs henchmen. You know, that's hench people. That's we all have roles.
Either that, or I would secretly like make all the Hufflepuffs like me, and then take it over, and then come back to Slytherin like reigning triumphant, and then they would finally like me and accept me.
That 100% sounds like a Slytherin move.
Yeah, but I guess if I were sorting myself, I would probably put myself in a Gryffindor, honestly.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. I am I'm a Slytherin talker guy, kind of.
And it's not even that I like Gryffindor. I just think that that's probably, like, as close to me as you're going to get.
Solid. That's a nice warm-up question. Okay, are you familiar with Pacific Rim?
Yes.
Okay, well, I was not enough to answer this question when I heard it, but I like the question.
Is this going to be about who your Whatchamadinger is?
No, that's the follow-up question.
Okay.
Yeah, who in fiction would you consider yourself to be drift compatible with? Who are you piloting a giant mech with?
Yeah, who am I drift compatible with? This is such a good question. Who am I drift compatible with? I would want to be drift compatible with Hermione Granger, because if I were drift compatible with Hermione, then we could literally take over the world and nothing would stop us, you know?
Yeah, seriously.
And that would be the ideal. I would probably, in actuality, probably be more drift compatible with someone like Anne Shirley, who's a bit histrionic. Anne Shirley is the protagonist of Anne of Green Gables, for people who don't know. You know, the redhead with all the stories. For somebody more modern, I would definitely want to be drift compatible with Buffy, and I definitely would want to be drift compatible with someone like Abed from Community. You know,
ooh, Abed.
Abed being drift compatible with Abed would be amazing. Honestly,
he's a hyper focused guy. He could really.
Yeah, he'd totally kick ass. Yeah, so I'm gonna say Abed. That's my answer.
Cool. And what would your what would the name of your Jaeger be?
Ooh, the name of my Jaeger. Honestly, probably a cheesy Inception reference because Inception is my fandom and I love it. So
like,
I probably would
Womb Womb or something.
Yeah. Burm, yeah. Just
the wobbly top.
Yeah, or the totem.
Cool.
The twirling totem.
Yep.
I like it.
The top totally fell, dipshits. That would be the name of my Jaeger.
See, somebody has strong opinions on what happened with the top.
Oh my gosh, I interviewed Chuck Tingle the other day.
I was just gonna ask, how was that?
Wait, you met Chuck Tingle?
He sent me all his answers by email, and there are a lot of answers that I haven't like shared, but I shared this one on Tumblr, on Twitter, because it made me really happy, and I asked him, because he's actually really into Leo DiCaprio and Hans Zimmer. And he's into like non-linear time and like alternate universes. So I figured all of this led up to an Inception question. So I asked him if he thought the top fell, and he was like, "No, handsome Leo's time party. The top did not fall. Sorry, Charlie." And I just thought that was amazing.
It's like pure Chuck Tingle.
Handsome Leo's time party in all caps.
Oh, jeez. I want to have a
That's
discussion with
someone's
that guy one day.
That's someone's Jaeger name.
He's really nice. Yeah, I would love a Jaeger called Handsome Leo's Time Party, so let's just go with that.
He's the guy who makes all those pounded in the butt books, right? Well, I'm glad I got to say that sentence. Wasn't there one that was pounded in my butt by my own butt?
Yeah, and then he wrote the sequel, Pounded in the Butt by My Book, Pounded in the Butt by My Own Butt.
Like, I want to meet him because I don't know. This must be documented. What's his ultimate goal? Like,
oh, I can tell you this because he's very consistent on this fact. His ultimate goal is, and this is pretty much a direct quote, like, and he says it over and over again. So his goal is to, quote, prove that love is real for all who kiss, end quote.
Okay, I want to know. Okay, then I want to dial back from his ultimate goal. I want to know what his what's his through line with all of this, in the sense that it seems like he's following the same tactics as trolls do, but he doesn't seem to be doing it for a trolling purpose.
Well, I am going to tell you to read my magnificent profile of him when it comes out, because if you don't know about him, he's not just a troll. He may not just be a satirical persona. There's a lot more to him than people really understand. So
yeah,
it goes into that. I'll just leave it there.
Okay, and not to spoil it too much, is he just Andy Kaufman reincarnated?
You know, so I talked to him and I talked to his son, and his son told me, at least the person who claims to be his son, told me that actually his dad is a huge Andy Kaufman fan, and he's a huge fan of performance art.
Okay,
so
well, Andy
I found
Kaufman
that...
was an Andy Kaufman fan, so...
Exactly. And I found that to be really revealing in context, so yeah.
Nice. That's the kind of weirdness that I like, is, you know, it sounds like from what you're saying and just from what I know of him, which is 5 minutes of research total ever, it seems to have a point to it. He's not just weird, like, look how weird I am, look, I'm subverting the system. It doesn't just seem to be that, which I really appreciate, and despite the jokes that I've just said, and I don't know how it sounds, but he's a very interesting guy that I'm not, I don't hold any ill will towards.
Yeah, he's super fascinating. It took me a long time to write this profile because I was juggling the different things that he represents and the different ways in which you can read him. And, you know, because of the things that John, his son of John, claims to be true about him, you know, if we accept them if we take them at face value, then we have to read him much differently. So it's really interesting and a bit challenging, but also he's just a really sweet guy. So
good.
Yeah.
That's lovely. Yeah. That's, you know, all coming from who you would be drift compatible with. I love this. I love this so much. Steph, you want
I would also love to be drift compatible with Chuck Tingle, just for the record.
And what would the name of that Jaeger be?
Pounded in the Jaeger by my own Jaeger.
I love it. I love it. That's I didn't know the best way to make that joke, and I hoped someone else would. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
All right, shall I go for another one?
Oh, please do. Do you have time, Asia? Do you have some time?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, great, cool.
I'm sitting here drinking Mountain Dew. I hope you guys don't mind.
No, Mountain
well,
Dew
now
is.
Now we have to end.
As an Overwatch and D.Va fan, I have a love for Mountain Dew as a concept. I'm not in love with Mountain Dew. I'm in love with the idea of Mountain Dew.
All right, here's a new one since the last time we talked to you. Do you have a favorite candy, crappy or like weird crappy candy or otherwise?
Ooh, it's pretty crappy, but I really love white chocolate, and it's like mostly butter, which is terrible, but I just love it anyway, and I'm always like, why? This is butter, stop.
Wait, white chocolate's just butter?
Yeah, it's pretty much just butter.
I did not know that.
I know, isn't that disgusting?
That's what makes it so delicious, though.
That's probably why I hate it.
Yeah, and I really love Hershey's Hugs, which are the kind with the white chocolate and the like regular milk chocolate mix, but they don't,
oh, those
like,
are
you
pretty
can't
good,
find
though.
Them anymore, and I'm sad. Oh,
oh
yeah.
Man, that makes me, my favorite Hershey kind of Hershey's Kiss is the peppermint ones, the white chocolate peppermint ones they have at Christmas time. They're so good. I don't know why I let.
You're all bringing up some candies I have not
weird
thought
candies.
About.
Candies.
Yeah, I don't have any like joke candy. I'm sorry. I don't have any like weird candy.
it's good.
Well, we just have this question because a previous guest told us about they were essentially cherry lemon heads, but they were like super racist ass box. And he was like, look it up, and it was a racist-ass box of candy. I mean, the candy itself wasn't racist because it wasn't sentient, and so it didn't have ideals, but the box had caricatures on it, and it was very awful, but...
I think I know what you're talking about. I think it's a...
Cherry Clan
candy. Yeah, oh my god.
Yep.
I don't know where they had this at, I never saw that. I don't know when these existed or anything, but... I bet you they were delicious. You could probably... So I hope they rebranded them and just released them as like cherry heads or something.
I know that cherry heads are a candy, so it's very possible.
Okay, lemon heads were just going on a little branding adventure to see if it would work. Spoiler alert, it didn't. Good candy. So what else? We have so many great questions. I love them all. Is it GIF or JIF?
Oh, it's totally GIF. Totally GIF.
Cool.
I mean, there's no question. It's a graphic exchange interface. What the hell?
Thanks. Thank you so much. And, you know, it's, I agree with that. You know, I will just wallow in that for a little bit, or I'll wait in that. But to ask a more real question, because that's really fast. Do you know what Kigurumis are?
Kigurumis?
Yeah. No. Oh, they're like those animal onesies that people have at conventions sometimes, or little pajamas.
Oh.
Yeah. They're very comfy, very iconic, and yeah. If you could have any animal, what would you want to have?
Ooh.
I suppose fictional animals do count because there are Hello Kitty ones and Pikachu ones, and I think a Stitch one. So
that's really neat. I would say maybe a Lynx one if they have them. I doubt they make them, but that would be cool.
Like a Lynx cat.
Yeah, like a Lynx cat, or maybe a bat. I have this like little cute like bat, and okay, so I have this like stuffed bat on my desktop, and it went viral on Tumblr a couple years ago. It's you may have seen it. Like, it's this Tumblr post with this like these bats, and they all have like galaxy like their wings are like this galaxy solar system cloth.
That sounds
so they're
cool.
Like, yeah, they're really cool. And the bat was super freaking expensive, but I mean, I was like, but she like sold out of them immediately because this thing got like 40,000 nodes. It was crazy. And so she was always selling out of them. And so I like got her a wait list, and like once I got one of her bats at like 3 a.m. and I was super over the moon about it. So now I have this like $60 stuffed bat. and so because I have this like $60 stuffed bat with solar like intergalactic wings, I'm telling myself that I'm really invested in bats. So.
Well, they do sell a bat Kigurumi complete with wings. So you aren't out of luck there.
There you go. I would like one with galaxy wings if they come in galaxy.
I'm sure you can modify it in a lovely way.
Yay.
That's a solid answer. Bats are pretty cool. Not zoo bats, but other bats.
Yeah, zoo bats can...
Zoo bats don't really have a chance to spread their wings.
Oh, they'll never get in my damn Pokeball, so they're flying off somewhere.
They're not worth your time. They really are not.
Just like candy fodder.
I can't believe they tricked us into wanting Zubats because that was never the case ever before that in the old games.
I know.
Pokemon Go, how's that going?
I have gotten, I think, 2 Pokeballs. Like, I've gotten 2 things, 2 animals, and that's it.
Oh, wow.
Like, I just haven't really, like... Every time I try and open it, either there are no like Pokestops around me because I'm doing it at a weird time, or my phone's about to die. So I just haven't really done it.
Yeah. Oh, you're not a loser. I don't play because my phone can't handle it. And I consider myself quite the winner. So apparently they lost like 2/3 of their users, and it's like, yeah, that still makes them the second highest grossing mobile game. So it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, people are still really into it, but. I imagine that that will change once the winter comes.
Yeah, winter is coming. I mean, they made their impact. They got their money. They gave us the 3 liters, you know.
Yeah, they're going to be swimming in it for a while, so more power to them.
Yeah, I mean, I follow Mr. Spark. Cool guy, Sparky. Lovely guy, so that was worth the app for me. Do we have any, like, one more we want to do?
Sure, get deep for a second, is there a notable crying moment that you have related to fandom? Like, whether it was happy tears or sad tears?
Oh, this isn't... You guys asked me this last time, I think, and I didn't have a good answer, because mostly I just sort of get teary about everything all the time. a notable crying moment. Well, I mean, apart from crying at shows and at, you know, deeply moving moments in the, you know, when they happen in canon, you know, like, I remember, obviously, who hasn't cried when they're reading Harry Potter, right? Like, especially reading book 7, right? Like, Everybody's cried reading book 7 multiple times. And if you say you haven't, I don't believe you, basically. But, like, in terms of, like, fandom in general, I tend to get sort of teary over, like, beautiful shared community moments. So, what's a good recent example? Like, God, the other day I was, what was I doing? I don't remember. I was crying over something that someone wrote in a fanfic, and it was about one of those, it was one of those fanfics that was like a response to a community discussion that the fandom had been having, if that makes sense. And I remember, I don't even remember what the discussion was, but I got really, you know, sort of full of the profundity of community and the profundity of people coming together to discuss and be happy about a thing and be passionate and critical about it. And then having that critical discussion generate fanfic, you know, and having that fanfic generate more discussion. that's the kind of thing that I tend to get teary over, you know, just that sort of communal collective energy that we put into fandom. It makes me kind of happy. So yeah,
that totally counts.
Yay. Sorry, I don't really have, like, a better answer.
Oh, no. I have a few moments where I've teared up. I guess, luckily for me, I haven't had a full-on cry, so I have a lot of half-teary moments that I can use. And one that, I don't know who I was telling about it, but it was not watching, like, a fiction series, but it was, like a talk series, extra credits they, like, do talks about video game concepts. And it was just, it had nothing to do with the episode proper. Like, it wasn't a subject, but one of their interstitial pictures of, you know, like a parent playing with their kid, it was like a black mom and her little son that had braids or whatever. I was like, oh man, and they're like little beings with stick figure people, like the art is not, it's intentionally not complex, but that just meant a lot to me. I don't know if I was like in a certain space in my life, but just seeing a black family playing games is not a it wasn't the point, it wasn't like a look how diverse, it was just like, oh yeah, people play games, like,
yeah,
I don't know, it just hit me really hard at that point. So yeah, it doesn't have to be like a fiction necessarily thing. It just was fandom related.
Yeah, no, that's, I think that's when people would talk about representation and diversity, like that's sort of what we want. Like we want those moments where the story isn't about your black experience or your identity as this marginalized thing, right? But just showing people being human.
Exactly. You know? Like I've seen all these petitions, well, not petitions, but efforts to say, hey, you can have people of color and women on your panels, and those panels don't have to be about being a person of color or a woman. They, you know, people have expertise in the thing that they're fans of, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just a situation of that. It wasn't an episode about being a black game developer or a family. It was just people play games with their kids. Some of those people are brown. It's not that complex, so.
Yeah.
I guess it's a solid answer. It's not. We have no issue. I have no issue with that answer, so.
Cool.
But I think that's everything. Do you have any questions for us?
I don't know. Stephanie, how are you liking New York so far?
I'm really enjoying it. I'm still kind of getting to know my little neighborhood because I don't get home until late enough that it's dark enough that I don't want to wander around by myself. Aww. Which would be true regardless of where I was living, but right. But I'm right near a park, like a pretty big park, not Central Park, but like a state park that is like has a lot of sports facilities and stuff that I'm gonna try to at least look at. They have a roller rink, so I like to roller skate, so I might go over there. But other than that,
oh neat, yeah, I'm always wanting to check out the roller derby, and I never get a chance to.
I'd love to go to roller derby.
Oh, it's so much fun. I haven't done it here, but I used to go when I lived in Virginia or near Virginia Beach, and that was cool.
Yeah, I've never been.
Neat.
So,
Cool. I'm trying to think of any other questions. I don't have any.
No, there's no. It's fine. It's just we want to give people the chance.
Would you guys be on my podcast if I do one? I'm not sure I'm going to do one, but like Vox wants me to sort of, or Vox is encouraging their staffers to do podcasts, and I've been thinking about putting together a horror podcast. So if I did a horror podcast, would you guys want to be on it?
Yeah, that'd give it a shot.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool.
I love talking.
I'm not really sure what my theme would be, but yay, horror. So.
Hey, well, it's a genre that doesn't seem to be going anywhere anytime soon, luckily.
Yeah, no, we've been having a good couple of years, so that's nice.
Oh, yeah. Did you happen to, is the new Blair Witch out?
Yes, it is. I reviewed it on Tuesday, and it opened on Friday. I was really disappointed in it, but I was just really, really disappointed because I really love Adam Wingard, the director. Like, he's done such amazing work, and this was not amazing at all.
Well, I heard the one review I saw was Movie Bob's review, and he was like, this movie is pretty good. If you saw the first one, this sequel has no reason to exist whatsoever. It's exactly the same beats with new technology, which is kind of a waste, but if you just
it's such a waste. The thing about the first one is that the character dynamics were really intense, you know, and even if you found them all annoying, like, they sort of propelled the movie in a way that was really compelling, even all these years later. And like Heather, sorry, I guess I have feelings about Blair Witch Project.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Like, Heather is just this, like, obnoxious Hermione, and she's just, like, she's gonna have things her way, and she's gonna, like, she's just a little force of nature, and I love her. And, like, this movie was such a milksop of a movie. Like, the characters weren't even, they were just these, like, nothing characters. Like, I don't even want to call them characters. They were just, like, they were people who came and said lines.
Just archetypes. You know? Were they even archetypes, or were they just
filler? No, they weren't even archetypes. They were just filler. Like, I have no idea what their relationships were to each other. I didn't care about any of them. Like, the main character was supposedly Heather's brother, and he kept, except for when he was telling us over and over that he really wanted to find his sister, and he believed that she was somehow in the woods, which makes no sense, because it's, like, what, 20 years later, and he's kind of
missed
a
boat on that
man.
One, buddy.
Like, none of that makes sense at all, but like, when he wasn't delivering those lines telling us that, like, it seemed like he didn't even remember that she existed, and like, he kept repeating these, like, it was like he didn't even know that his sister had left footage, like, of her time in the woods. Even though that makes no sense either, because he just kept doing these, like, blatantly doing, I wondered if he's a sociopath. Like, I wondered if he'd come out into the woods to, like sadistically lead all his friends through the same path in the same ways without warning them in any way whatsoever. Because I was like, there's no way he doesn't know that he's repeating, like, literally doing exactly the same things
in
exactly the same way.
And that would have been an interesting plot twist that he's doing it on purpose, right? Like, that would have been worth exploring.
Oh, that would have been way, way beyond this movie. And again, like, Adam Wingard, the director, and Simon Barrett, like, have collaborated on other movies before. Like, if you want to see two really good movies, I highly recommend Your Next, which is this, like,
I heard satirical... good things about that.
Yeah, it's like the satirical tongue-in-cheek home invasion film, and The
Isn't
Guest,
it the,
which is...
the deaf guy? They try to invade, or is he deaf or blind?
No, you're thinking of that Netflix movie that came out earlier this year, where the woman is deaf.
No, it was like an old guy, like a war vet kind of guy.
Well, there are two. Okay, so there was one that came out this year where the woman was deaf on Netflix, and that one was called Hush. And then the one that came out over the summer was Don't Breathe. Which
That's
is,
right, okay.
Yeah, The Blind Man.
But was that any good?
It was amazing, actually. I highly recommended it. Okay. There's been some controversy over one of the plot twists because people think it's misogynistic, and I will defend it too. I want to defend it a lot. So
okay.
I reviewed that movie, and I really loved it, so whatever. But cool. And especially because Don't Breathe just came out and was fantastic, I was even more disappointed with this one. But yeah, Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett are normally much better than this, so I don't know what happened.
Everybody has their times. You know, Zack Snyder has made decent films, so if he can make a decent one, good directors can make bad ones. Hi-oh!
I imagine overproduction had a lot to do with this failure, because I feel like when they're, you know, just doing their own thing on an indie budget, they're fine. So
I wonder if that's... I feel that way about Paranormal Activity. I mean, I haven't seen past the first one, but it seemed like that.
Oh my god, I love. I have a lot of feelings about that franchise.
The first one, I liked it, but I kind of hated it. Not in its premise. I thought its premise and its, I think everything about that film was great, except for the fact that the plot got pushed, in the sense that, if that film was an allegory for how men are destroying society, if that was the point of that, I think it worked amazingly, but I don't think it was that. But, like, the husband, boyfriend guy, he was like, I gotta film this, and the priest, like, hey, buddy, how about you stop screwing with the demon and let it live? He's like, I gotta film it, and you're like, really, buddy? Like, how about you stop? Like, what's the point of this other than you wanted to make a found footage film?
Well, I know I've actually read pretty compelling meta about that film that suggests that it's about domestic abuse as visited upon, like, the emotional abuse and maybe past physical abuse that's visited on Katie Featherstone in that film, the girlfriend. And I think that's pretty interesting. Obviously, Paranormal Activity is sort of a ridiculous, like, conceit when you see it play out, because the guy, Mika, is such a douchebag. Like, he's such a douchebag, but he's a douchebag in this way that, you're right. Like, it drives the plot to an extreme that is ridiculous, but also it's pretty freaking scary.
Right. I guess, like, it, as a reading of domestic violence, I think that makes the film, like, oh, okay. Like, that's why he's doing this. This is a form of abuse. Like, again, not condoning it, but, oh, that makes more sense than, I really don't think this demon's that much of a threat. Like, just to me, it was, everyone around him was like, could you stop? So at least it was realistic in that sense that everyone else.
Right. I mean, I think you can read it as her being, like, sort of caught between a rock and a hard place. Like, the way that most women in domestically violent relationships are, you know, like, they don't want to leave their partners, but also they can't afford not to leave their partners, right? And I think that's, well, the critique that I've read of Paranormal Activity through that lens is that the film sort of positions the demon as being, like, her way out, if that makes sense. And at the end, of course, like, I don't want to spoil you guys, or if you haven't seen it, at the end, basically she sort of gets her way out one way or another. Like, she doesn't die at the end, and then she comes back for the succeeding films. But mostly what I really want to say is that, like, so Paranormal Activity, the franchise, here you go. So you've got Paranormal Activity, the first one, which is pretty okay. It's scary, and you need to see it in order to see the rest, in order to understand the rest. Paranormal Activity 2, like, is complete garbage.
Like, oh no, we don't, like, know what to do with money.
but you need to watch it at least once, because you won't understand Paranormal Activity 3 unless you see Paranormal Activity 2. And Paranormal Activity 3 is amazing. It's so good. It's okay. Really, really good. I love that film so much. Like, it's legitimately scary. It's, like, legitimately creative. Like, they achieve a lot of, like, really suspenseful effects really easily. And it's fantastic, and I just want Katie to, like demon possess Katie to, like, walk around stealing everybody's kids and, like, kicking ass. Like, that's all I want. I just want that to happen in, like, every movie ever. And then the last two, like Paranormal Activity 4 and 5, are, like, negligible. But then they did another one called The Marked Ones, and The Marked Ones is also awesome. Like, it's, like, basically they took it out of, like, this family and this, like, the neighborhood, and they, like, expanded the focus and put it on this Latino community, like, a completely different part of California.
But, like, the same world kind of thing?
Yeah, it's, okay. Like, same world, like, different, like, the same curse coming to a different, completely different community, and these new people are amazing, and they're badass, and it's
cool.
Yeah, and it's awesome, and they, like, decide to go after a bunch of witches with, like drug dealers and shotguns, and it's incredible. I just want every film to, like, have these kinds of neat ways of taking on the world building.
It kind of sounds like what Saw did. Like, it started as a horror film, and then devolved into a gore fest, and then devolved into, like, some complex mystery that didn't make any sense, and the gore and the horror was just kind of like, it's kind of there, but you're just here for the story, I suppose. I don't know why, but here comes Saw 10.
Yeah, like, I think Paranormal Activity is not quite that. I mean, it's not gory, but like, the last two films are fun, but they're not, like, they're not necessarily good. But they're fun.
Are they enjoyable, watchable, at least, then?
Yeah, they're enjoyable, I think.
Yeah, I'll take an enjoyable movie all day.
Yeah, like, so if you're ranking them, like, my rank would be Paranormal Activity 3, Paranormal Activity, Marked Ones, probably 4, 5, and then 2. So.
Oh, jeez. Well, at least they got the nonsense out of the way early.
You asked. I mean, or you didn't ask. I volunteered. But anyway.
No, this is the kind of stuff I like to hear because I was wondering, like, people are seeing these movies. There must be some through line there that's at least enjoyable. So I'm glad I got that cleared up. Now I kind of, like, want to watch them at least.
Fun.
I like that. I like horror movies conceptually, but I'm a huge chicken, so I never see them. The last horror movie I saw was The Strangers, I think, which I loved, which I think was a brilliant movie.
Really? I don't think that movie.
Why?
So I didn't see it when it came out, and I saw it, like, after all the rave reviews. I just thought it was so misogynistic and made no sense in terms of, like, giving the characters agency. Like, man and the woman who were trapped in the house. They were completely ridiculous, and, like, their helplessness was absurd. And, like, the way that they, like, deprived of, is it Liv Tyler?
I don't even know who was in that movie.
What's her name?
Probably that.
They deprived her character of agency to an extreme degree, but also, like, it just, none of it made any sense. Like, I get that it was all artistic and whatever, but, like, as a plot, like, it was absurd. Like, I hated it.
Okay, so that's fair. So I was not in the phase of my life where I had any kind of focus on social lenses. So if someone had told me at the time that it was misogynistic, there's no way I would have been able to read it that way. I can see that now looking back on it. I mean, I don't remember too much.
I think even more than that, I was just annoyed because they didn't do anything. Like,
I think that's why I liked it.
Their phone, like, lying in obvious places, and, like, I don't know, it was just.
I think I just liked the concept so much. Because there were some points where I'm like, why don't you just try running down the road? At least you have a chance of getting out rather than being stuck. And there was a few times where they did, like, the Michael Myers thing of being able to be right behind you, once or twice. I just like the idea of this concept that there's no monster, there's not too much, like, metaphysics going on here, it's just some people that came here for no reason, and that was scary to me because, like, oh, this isn't, like, this could theoretically happen, maybe not quite this way, and I probably would have tried to get away, but versus, like, that's kind of why I liked it. I don't know, like, ghost movies are, like, more scary. I'm like, oh, there's ghosts, but I'm like, probably not, I hope not.
Yeah, that's actually the power of, if we can talk about home invasion tropes, like, that's pretty much, like, a standard home invasion trope, is just that, like, when you see a movie like Strangers or, like, Funny Games, which is, like, the trope codifier, and it's a terrible, like, it's a very, very, very extremely dark, hard-to-watch, harrowing film, so I don't recommend it if you, like, are faint of heart, but it's a really, really well-known horror film. Like, the trope is always that you have these, like, faceless invaders coming in, and, like, they represent, like, pure anarchy, and at the end of the line, at the end of the movie Strangers, she asks, why'd you do it? And they're like, 'cause you were home.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's it. Like, that, there's always that element of them just coming and doing it because of mayhem. But, in Don't Breathe, the really cool thing that that movie does is it takes the home invasion trope and it completely inverts it, because you actually side with it's almost like they basically combine the home invasion trope with a heist film where you're rooting for the robbers. And so you're rooting for these people who are trying to, like, do, like, their one last heist job.
They're there for a reason. House. They're not there just to cause problems. I mean, they are, but they're doing it for gain rather than just to kill people.
Right. But when they go inside the house, what you discover is that, like, that sense of, like, faceless anarchy and, like, lawlessness that the home invaders usually bring with them is already inside the house.
And it's coming from inside the house.
It's coming from inside the house in this, like, really, like, way that I found revelatory and really well done. So, yeah. That's a rec for Don't Breathe.
I'll have to watch it. So, yeah, so to answer your question in a roundabout way, if you would like to do a horror show, I'd be more than willing to try to shoot the breeze a little bit.
Cool. Yay. Yay. I will keep that in mind. I'm not really sure what I would... I gotta work on it. I just have been putting it off, but I want to try and maybe do something where, like, we like, watch a film that we neither of us have seen before, or where, like, say I try and get you to like a genre that you don't like or think that you won't like. And I just throw new films at you, and then we talk about them. So
that's interesting. Cool. Well, I like it. I'm very excited about whatever that turns into.
Thanks.
Yeah. But in the meantime, we should probably tell the listeners You can go first, Asia. If the listeners liked your voice, or they like the things you're saying, or they're like, this person is awesome, how can I get more? How can I get more? Where would they go to find you?
Well, first off, thank you for letting me talk about horror. That's always fun. I'm sorry I derailed the conversation totally. But
I'm very glad you did.
If you guys want to talk to me, you can talk to me on Twitter. I am there at Asia Romano, which is just my full name, AJARONMANO, like Ray Romano. And I'm also on Tumblr as Bookshop, bookshop.tumblr.com. I'm pretty much everywhere as Bookshop. Yes, but if you find me on either Tumblr or Twitter or Reddit, you can message me on Reddit. I'm also Bookshop there. I will probably say hi, and you can ask me for horror recs, and I'll give you a horror rec. and yeah, that's it.
Nice, nice, thanks.
And oh, and also on Vox too. I should say Vox, yeah.
Vox. Oh yeah, we started the show with that. We could end it with that. Call it kind of
bookends.
Bookends, that's the word I was looking for. I was like, it's a book thing. palindrome-esque. And we should also tell the listeners where they can find us. Steph, should you do it or should I do it? What should we give the listeners today?
Oh, how about you take it this time?
All right, here we go. Okay, so say you hear these smooth, silky voices, and you've already found Asia, all the places where she is, and you're like, man, Steph and Dom are pretty badass. Where can I find them? That's easy. I'm Brother Dom all over the internet. You know, Twitter, Tumblr, anywhere I want you to find me. It's Brother Dom with an A, not the R. You know, I did it on purpose. You know, have some faith in me. Steph is the Snow Queer on Tumblr and Captain Steph on Twitter, where she's always saying good stuff as well. You can find this podcast on Twitter at Character Rev. So that's two R's in the middle, Character Rev. And you can find us at characterreveal.simplecast.fm if you want to get the podcast itself, or find us on Stitcher. We're also on Facebook. Just search Character Reveal. We'll show up. You know the logo. It'll be great. You'll love us. And Steph and I both also write at the Lady Geek Girl and Friends blog. It is an intersectional feminist blog about nerdy stuff. It's pretty cool. You'll like it. And that's at ladygeekgirl.wordpress.com. We have posts up all the time, and they're good stuff. And that's where you can find us. How'd it go, Steph?
Well done.
Oh, thank you. But...
Yeah, slow clap for Dom.
Slow clap to myself. I have no shame in that. But Asia, we want to extend our huge gratitude for you joining us, you know, the first time and this time. For listeners, it's the first time, but we really, really appreciate it.
Oh, sure. It was a lot of fun.
Great. Yeah, we hope you enjoyed yourself. Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this one as well. And you can find us at all those places each and every week. So until next time, see you later.